Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. Totally stoked today to have with us Jacob Nordby. And this is really fun for you guys out there in Empower Radio land, since Jacob used to be a host on Empower Radio too. And we're very glad to have him back today as a guest. And I just read his book, Blessed Are the Weird, which was really fun. And it really spoke to me so much that I actually just wanted to read it out loud on air to all of you folks, which would be really entertaining for me, but maybe not so much fun for you guys. But this book, I underlined all over the place. I carried it around with me and ultimately dropped it in the bathtub while I was reading it, which is honestly about as big a compliment as I can give, really. So Jacob is the creator of the popular online course Creative Unbootcamp and author of his book, Blessed Are the Weird, A Manifesto for Creatives. He also leads writing groups and offers private creative coaching, as well as retreat intensives. He's really passionate about creating safe spaces where people can liberate themselves and become who they are. And I thought of him, as after I read his book, as a mentor, space holder, and creative curator for the weird. And I count myself among the blessed weird, since according to Jacob, psychics, healers, and mystics fit very well into his weird category. So welcome, Jacob.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
So tell us a little bit about your journey into the weird and what that means for you.
First of all, I don't think I've had a better compliment. So thanks for all the kind things you said. That's really cool. Wow. And I know we don't have all night or 2 days or 2 weeks or whatever to talk about this right now, but my journey really was about uncovering something that had been there since I can remember and was not able to be expressed in the way I grew up. I was very, you know, I grew up in this really fundamentalist Christian cult situation. And so my actions and even my thoughts and words were, you know, heavily manipulated or influenced, but I felt like something wasn't right. And so, you know, being a conformist, being somebody who really did try to fit in, it was painful in many times for me, and also an incredibly sensitive child. It was really painful to know that there was something off and then try to ask the questions and then get, you know, shut down. Like, yeah, you don't get to ask that question. And it wasn't that I was trying to be a rebel or anything like that. It was just, I knew something wasn't lined up with my heart and I could feel it and it didn't make sense. So it took me many years. I didn't leave that group until I was in my mid-20s, which is the first time I saw a television show and the first time I saw a movie and the first time I wore a t-shirt out in public, to give you an example.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you must have had like really a huge contrast to have this difference inside of you and have to try and navigate this terrain that's sort of more shut down and constricting than really even most people have to deal with.
Well, I think so. And, you know, of course, I know your show is a lot about healing, Lisa. And one of the things that has been wonderful for me is to integrate all of that over time and be able to look back at it now. And I realized that I was such a sensitive kid that had I been out in the normal world, I would have probably sustained a lot of wounds. I mean, I certainly sustained some in that environment, but I didn't go to public school, not a single day of public school. I was either homeschooled or really tiny Christian private schools. And so I look back at that, and I just want to put this on the record to say, I look back at that as I was raised in kind of a walled garden. So in some way it was perfect. But to answer your question, yeah, it was really difficult. And you know, while it was going on, of course, all I knew is that there was a tremendous amount of pressure. And I didn't know anything about energy. I didn't know, you know, if I could have listened to the Lisa Campion show as a kid, I'm sure I would have gone, oh, I'm not so, something makes sense now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so maybe Can you describe to us a little bit about your definition of weird? Because I really think this is sort of central to your central tenet to your book. And what are the blessed weird? Who are the blessed weird?
Well, yeah, thank you. You know, I really feel strongly that everyone has their own quirks. They have very unique aspects. So I don't want to make it sound like there's this, you know, there's this club that nobody gets to be in unless they're just cool enough or anything like that. What I've noticed, though, Lisa, is there are some of us here are not like the others. And it really does go deeper than just having some personality quirks, because everyone does. Now, I do feel at a very deep core level, everyone has something beautiful and unlike anyone else. And so I want to be clear about that. But it seems like some of us showed up here with tremendous sensitivity. And so that's one of the aspects I've noticed about the Blessed Weird, is that tremendous sensitivity. And that oftentimes makes us very porous to life. So we can feel things and see things and think things that not everyone else does. And sometimes that can, you know, get us in trouble or get us ostracized when other people are used to a certain kind of, you know, the general conversation and flow of life. And we step in and we're just not, and they can feel our oddness in some way. Because being that sensitive, we tend to also attract people who have wounds and who have deep needs. And sometimes they don't even know why. It's not like we're walking around with badges on saying, I'm a healer, show up and talk to me, that kind of thing. It's just somehow energetically people know this person has something for me. And that can be a long journey, as I'm sure you know, because you do it and you talk with healers all the time. But it can be a really long journey to get to the place of knowing how to use that and then to know the difference between what's my stuff and what's their stuff, and then how to balance that out. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I totally hear what you're saying. I one of the things that I do as a psychic and a teacher is train sensitives and empaths. Because I have the same thing that you did, which was really myself and seeing so many other people suffer tremendously by mm-hmm. being oversensitive and really feeling like the sensitivity is a curse, when my now standing where I am, see it as a gift. And mm-hmm. like you said, it's the gift of the healer, you know, so mm-hmm. that porousness, and I see the porousness literally in the energy field, like a spongy mm-hmm. kind of energy field. And it's the perfect toolkit for people that are meant to do healing work. You know, if we can feel what other people are feeling in their bodies and their emotions and their souls, right. we can show up. And I think that's why sensitive people are so magnetic to people mm-hmm. that need healing.
Yeah, I find that fascinating, and I love that you're actually helping people learn how to balance that out, because, you know, there are a lot of us here right now, and the world certainly needs us. But I've noticed that sometimes the energy can go the other direction, if we don't know how to take care of ourselves very well, rather than being helpers and actually, you know, being across the line helping, sometimes our energy can go pretty dark, pretty negative, and that's the flip side of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that there's a wound, you know, and we, as healers, we're always our first and best client, you know, so we have to do a lot of attending, I think, to our own wounds before we can really help other people with their wounds. And until we do that, we can sort of swim around in that wound and really live from that place. And I loved how you divided sort of in the your book, the archetypes. You used archetypes to describe some of the categories of people that fit into this. Can you talk a little bit about those archetypes?
I can. And one thing I didn't get in when you asked, you know, who are the weird, I wanted to add this part here, because not everyone who listens might feel that they're a psychic or an energetic healer or something like that. But here's a really kind of simple way of saying it. I feel like one of the most important attributes of the Blessed Weird is this abnormal desire for what's real. So we don't even necessarily don't know how to define it. We just know that we must have a real life. And a lot of people, I feel like most people want to get real or be real, but a lot of people are a little more content with, you know, hey, if it kind of works, I'm just going to go along with it. The blessed weird really, really can't stand. It's actually toxic to us to not live a real life, which means that sometimes we have to shake things up and move out of a life that didn't work. So I wanted to make sure and get that in there. And what was your question about the archetypes again?
I'm just wondering, well, I loved what you said before we go into the archetypes, like, and about the realness. And I think about that like as authenticness. Mm-hmm. Like it's like we're allergic to lack of authenticity.
There you go.
And yeah. That makes us weird because most people seem to like be all right with, you know, sliding through in socially acceptable terms, you know, and that doesn't work for I think, the blessed weird. We crave authenticity, and lack of authenticity is so draining to our energy, which I know you talked about in the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Love that. So the archetypes, like, you know, you talk about artists and poets and mystics and rebels, heretics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about those. I mean, there's so many, but give us a little gist of how you, those archetypes that you see.
You know what? I feel like I often skim over this because I've seen it so much and I've, you know, it's been read so many times. I feel like I should read the Little Blessed or the Weird poem that started this whole thing. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So there's a whole Beatitudes for the Weird, but this is just the first part. Blessed are the weird people, poets, misfits, writers, mystics, heretics, painters, and troubadours, for they teach us to see the world through different eyes. And Lisa, that was the little piece that I wrote in 2012 going through this breakthrough of my life. And this is when I actually got to experience moving into what a life that was more real for me. And I wrote this really for myself and shared it. And then that's when it really started to take off. And then it took off in thousands and tens of thousands and millions of shares and all this stuff. And so that's when I realized I needed to talk more about these archetypes, these placeholders, the poets and misfits and all them, because each one represents more than just kind of that label. And so in every case, they represent in some way through word or through visual or through sound or through spirit, the heretics and the misfits, and the mystics too. You know, they represent in some way this deep longing from all of our hearts to express ourselves, to express our souls, and to find that one way, which for us, and some of us have more than one, but I feel like there's really a true, deep, raw song of the soul that if I find it in myself and then spend the time and be patient as it emerges, it's going to come out in a particular way that no one else could do. It's only mine or only yours. And so each one of these to me represented a category in some way that where people had found a way to express that. And of course, as I delved into each one of these silos of these archetypes, Lisa, I was surprised at where each one of those took me.
I thought it was really moving, you know, that part of the book that you wrote about. And I think really touched because so many of those people are marginalized, you know.
Yes.
As a psychic myself, you know, I was like, well, just up until I'm probably the first generation of psychics that didn't get automatically put into mental hospitals.
Right. Right.
You
yes.
know, like, so I could feel that, like, you know, this pain on, like you were talking about the pain, you know, the pain of how hard it is to carry that, energy in a society where you end up in the mental hospital or marginalized or outcast. And also how, I guess the word that kept coming to me is soulful. It's how soul, like you're really talking about living from your soul. Mm-hmm. Don't you think? Is that how you see it?
I do see it that way. I do. And you know, in our world, so that wasn't always weird, Lisa. I mean, people who do what you do used to be in ancient cultures, they were revered. And the prophets were as weird as a bunch as you could find. And so were the, you know, the seers and the crones and the wise women and the shamans. They did some strange stuff, but they were revered. And see, in our culture, you know, where the Western culture has gone, it's so deeply married the scientific method that rational process got elevated to a level where these people who had these gifts didn't fit into that anymore. And it's like, we can't prove why this works, so you're out of here. That I feel strongly that here we are in a time on Earth that's allowing us to find out what does living from soul even mean again. And not everyone will do it, certainly, but there's the opportunity. And as you said, we probably aren't going to get thrown in jail or in the mental hospital necessarily for finding out what that means for exploring it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. It feels like, in a way, a good time to be weird, you know, like there's some cool maybe to be had, especially, you know, with psychics or nerds, or like there's a little bit of cool to weird right now, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, I just saw one of my friends. You probably know this guy, JP Sears. He does funny videos. That he just did a TEDx talk. He did a TED talk, and it was something about saying yes to your weird. I'm like, okay, well, weird is getting pretty close to mainstream now.
I know, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
So, one of the things that I also noticed that sort of is a pattern maybe with the weird was that they seem to have a different way of seeing things, you know, and that ability to be expansive, to be rule breaking, to shift paradigm shifting, to see multiple versions of reality, kind of like a quantum view of things, seems to also be like at the center of weirdness for most people. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, describe that vision one more time. I think I got it, but I want to make sure I'm answering it.
Okay, so I just feel like one of the gifts that the weird have to the world is the ability to see the world in a different way.
Mm.
And in a way that shifts paradigms, that breaks the mold, that maybe allows them to create actually bring new information, new ideas. And that people that are more mainstream see the world sort of monovision, you know, like they see like it is what it is, you know, like I think of that as TV land. It's like what you see on TV is real, you know, and the weird see in a different way. They see in a weird way that maybe creates new ideas.
I love that. Yeah. No, yeah, great. I'm glad I asked you to clarify, because I think you said some great things right there. So, Lisa, from my perspective, so there's a term that Robert Anton Wilson used in the book Prometheus Rising. He called it reality tunnels. And it's this, it's the way that we see the world. And then when you have a lot of people who have similar reality tunnels, that becomes a collective vision. And so it becomes this agreement. This is the way the world is. Weird people have in many cases gone through jarring experiences in their lives where they've been shattered or rattled out of that common way of seeing. And some of us were just born that way. And then some of us also had additional, you know, experiences that kept knocking us out of, no matter how hard we might try to keep seeing the world that way, the common collective way, we kept getting bumped out of it. And so so it's basically, if you kind of think of a window and most people are looking out this one window and others, some of us have a window that's kind of slightly askew from that. So we actually see a different view. It might include part of the same view, but we see more of it, or we see it from a different angle. Yeah. And of course, psychologists have all sorts of ways of describing that anomalous, mental process and that sort of thing. But so that's how I see it. And then if those of us who are able to do that and then bring it back in some kind of a productive way, we can actually share that and have other people join us and go, oh wow. I mean, it's John Lennon, you know, the Dreamers song, and it's Elon Musk, who has such a profoundly different vision of what's possible in the world. I mean, and some of these people really do change collective reality because of how powerful their vision is, and because they can come back and share it with others.
Yeah, I love that. And I it made me, like, when I finished the book, I was feeling really, like, hopeful, actually, in a way, like, that hopeful that this way, the way that the weird see the world, and whether they're poets or musicians or, you know, Elon Musk genius inventors, can change the world and can bring about a positive change. I felt quite hopeful.
Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
I also totally loved it. You know, kind of in the end, you talk about how your life is your art. Mm. And I totally wanted to get, like, that tattooed on my arm or something. Oh. So I could, you know, really think about that one a lot. Tell us a little bit about your life is your art.
Well, I feel strongly that that is the core. My good friend, Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., and his dad, Four Agreements author, they speak a lot about the Toltec philosophy. It really isn't a religion. It's more of a way of seeing. And they talk a lot about we are the artists of life. We are the artists of life. And I feel like, and they talk about becoming creators and taking the responsibility back. And so through all of these things, I feel like that becomes the core of it, is just this process really is going back to who we really are, and it's taking back the responsibility. It moves the locus of power, of control in our lives, away from being a victim to circumstances, to the world, to politics, to banking, to any of these things out there that seem so overwhelming at times. Bring it back inside and beginning to navigate then with using the compass of the heart. And beginning then to create and realize, wow, I have this power. I actually do have this power, and I can use it in a loving way. I can use it in a productive way.
Mm, that's good. And how do we, if we feel like we fit in that category, kind of take care of ourselves? How do we continue to feed our souls and live from that place?
Mm. You know, I feel like one of the key challenges we have is feeling alone. And so connecting with people like you who are sharing about how to get in touch with our gifts, it can be a really powerful way of feeling less isolated. And then finding community in some degree, finding out that we are not alone, that we are not isolated, that we aren't broken, that there are others like us. I find that that gives me a lot of courage to then dive right deeply back in. And I'll just say this, there is no substitute for creating things that matter, for creating a life that matters. So whatever energy source we need, you know, in terms of refilling ourselves, for me, it's nature and it's music and it's good conversations with other people. Those kinds of things bring me back into myself. They make me feel okay again. They help me breathe. And then diving right back into creating something, that to me is one of the best medicines we can ever, because if we're out there in the world trying to go, well, I don't know if this is going to work. I feel so small and significant, or I don't know if my stuff will ever, you know, touch anyone. That actually saps our energy. It's like watching the iPhone battery get down to 10% and then 2%. So diving right back in and saying, I don't know where this is going, but my heart, my soul says I need to make this, whatever it might be. I find that that is probably the quickest way to become full again and to know that we have a chance.
Yeah, I liked how you talked about how it doesn't have to be a job, and that sometimes people pull away from trying to do it because they can't figure out how to make money doing it. And, you know, if we can just allow that energy to move through us in whatever way it can, it's very feeding to us.
Yes, exactly.
So how do people get in touch with you, Jacob? Like, how do you work with people if they wanted to learn more about what you do?
Oh, that's a good question. I do have a couple of times a year, at least right now, I have the Creative Unboot Camp, which I announce to people who are on my email list and through Facebook and stuff. So you can people can connect through the Facebook page, Blessed Are the Weird, or they can go to blessedaretheweird.com and they can download a sample of that book if they want to for free on the front page. And there's also a place to contact me if they have questions about creative coaching or other mentorship programs.
Good. And I guess the The last thing I want to say, really, because we're almost out of time, is that you quoted one of my very favorite quotes ever, which is Maslow's writers write and painters paint quote. Mm. I love that one. And which I just dreadfully misquoted, but I like that thought of, like, when we're really in that creative flow, we just get up and do it, right? We can't help it. We get up and spring up. You know, we wake up at 5 a.m. and do what we do because it's emerging out of us, and that to me feels like the soulful thing again.
I love that. Well, and Lisa, let me just interject this quickly. Walt Whitman, one of my favorite old voices, said this, and this was what brought me out when, as a kid, eventually, re-examine all that you have been told in school or church or in any book. Dismiss whatever insults your own soul, and your very flesh shall be a great poem.
Wow, that's awesome. I love it. Talk about your life as art, right?
Exactly.
Wow, thank you so much for coming back to Empower Radio to join us for this this all too brief talk about art and weird, and the blessed weird. So thank you. I appreciate so much that you're with us today.
Lisa, pleasure is all mine, and thank you for all the work you're doing. I know you're helping a lot of people.
Thanks, Jacob, and thank all of you guys for joining us today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time here on Empower Radio.